A lovely day. Bill Withers, 1108, passed away, age of 81, unrelated to the virus. What a nice run, what a great catalog. Not a long one, such good songs. Segue. Voices from the large town. Have you done your exercise yet? I do the blender when I need to. It goes like this. Don't forget James Brown. 1109, this is John Williams here until 12 noon. You can exercise to music just like that in front of your TV set. It's just not fun. but nobody's... Who told you a pandemic was going to be a good time? By the way, Sharon, just jump in here real quick. Speaking of yelling at our kids. Hey, Sharon, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi, Sharon. Are you there? Sharon is not, but she was on with my producer a moment ago, and she said that regarding the teenager, call the girl's parents. We had a guy on a little while ago named David, and he said, I don't know what to do. I can't control my 18-year-old. He keeps going over to his girlfriend's house. That sounds like a setup to a joke. It's not. But so many parents of 17 and 22-year-olds are really struggling to share that living space with them and get them to respect COVID-19. And I say take the keys away, but doggone it, you'd think you could persuade the girl's parents, too, because the boyfriend and girlfriend keep getting together.
Didn't it come up? I thought he talked to the parents.
He said that the parents for the girl don't get it.
Right.
They're not on page. Yeah, I guess, you know, so go ahead and call them, but now you got to persuade them, too. And now you're the bad guy, but you're not the bad guy. There's this little germ. It's called a coronavirus. It's the bad guy. All right, 11:10.
So what if they just were to consider her a member of the family and she lived in the house with them?
I guess so.
Right? I mean if they're only seeing each other.
Okay, fine. You know what? That to me is the healthiest. And I don't know that I love the idea of my 18-year-old and his girlfriend sleeping in the basement or bedroom. But if you literally think, boy, this is a funny calculation, Steve, that you can't keep them in their respective homes, them trading germs home to home is how you all get the virus. So I would just give my 18-year-old a peanut butter jelly sandwich and a, you know,
but, well, my,
and say, see ya, and you go stay over there.
My kind of point, though, is that if both families are sequestered and the only intermingling is the two of them, then it's...
But it's not. I mean, did anybody go to the grocery store? Then they brought it into that house.
Right.
And then when that person goes to the next house, that's how the germ travels. I get your point, Steve. It's very tempting to do that. Brenda and I have a play date set with my son and daughter-in-law for tonight, and we've canceled that. And they don't have it, and we don't have it, but how do we know one of us didn't pick it up recently, and we're asymptomatic right now? I hate that. Okay. Ed Farmer passed away the other day, unrelated to this as well. He was not young. He was not well. He'd had kidney issues before. He had done one spring training game, and then he passed away a couple of days ago. We told you first about it yesterday, and with all of the news and the Lori Lightfoot press conference, we weren't able to just recollect about him on this show. Dave Bennett is sitting in his sports box, wherever that is. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Good, John.
By the way, as a parent of young people, do you want to chime in on that? What to do with the 18-year-old who's not obeying the rules right now? No. Okay.
You know what I mean? I think you have to somehow just explain and get the point across to them how dire this is and how important it is.
Yeah.
And you feel invincible, but that doesn't mean the people you're with are invincible. And... You know, we did something. You mentioned canceling your game night tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So we took our kids who live in the city. We're in the burbs. We took them dinner. We picked up dinner for them. the other night, both sets of kids, and we played Grubhub and dropped the food off out in front of their apartments, but it was horrible to not even be able to give them a hug. You know, and I don't mean it's not as horrible as what a lot of people are going through right now. Believe me, I get that. It's just, but it's odd to see your children and have to keep your distance from them.
Mark Carmen's also on a phone line from WGN Radio Sports. Recently married, but no kids yet, right, Carm?
That is correct, John. We're doing great in our one-bedroom apartment where we have not killed each other yet, and we're having a wonderful time. Thank you.
Don't have children, okay? That's just what I'm saying. Do not have kids.
Okay. Thank you.
They'll break your bank and your heart. And it's having kids is one of the most difficult things you can do. It's also one of the most wonderful things you can do. Nothing is harder. Nothing is better. Ed Farmer passed away. Dave, what's the wiki on him? Who is Ed Farmer?
Ed Farmer was a kid who grew up at, I believe it was 79th and Francisco, who attended St. Rita, who told his mom when he was 5 years old, on his first trip to Comiskey Park, that he would play there someday. He went on to pitch for 8 major league teams, including the White Sox, and then after his playing career, did some front office stuff and eventually went into the broadcast booth and spent nearly 30 years, 29 seasons, in the radio booth of the White Sox.
What do you add to that, Mark Carmen?
I add that Ed Farmer was just a beloved character at Comiskey Park, and everyone's talked about being such a great storyteller, but it really needs to be underlined that the stories were just unbelievable. Like, you would never hear them from anybody else. And he told me one time, John, that they, you know, it was September 11, 2001. The White Sox had played the Indians on the 10th, and no planes were flying. And Farmer called up the president, George Bush, and somehow got the White Sox in the air. And they're on the tarmac, and he's telling the pilot, "You just pull over here, and we're going to wait for clearance." And then somehow they got the clearance, no planes were flying, and the White Sox, who were supposed to play the Yankees in New York, were able to fly home. Like, can that story even be true? But you go back and look at the timeline, and the White Sox did play the Indians on September 10th, so there's no reason to doubt them. That, to me, is just the craziness and the beauty of Ed Farmer.
And that's why I always thought, Dave, that you're a play-by-play guy, that he was not a natural play-by-play guy. He was kind of a hybrid. He's the story guy. He would typically be the color man because he played the game, and then you get a Pat Hughes, an Andy Mays or somebody like that to do the play-by-play. But he was kind of doing both, wasn't he?
He was. When he was with John Rooney, and John is an excellent play-by-play man, has been the voice of the St. Louis Cardinals for many years.
Sure.
They were a terrific team together. They played off each other very well. John was a master in leading Ed into stories, especially in his forte, having been a pitcher, was he knew that part of the game as well as anybody. And so you would hear great stories about the White Sox pitchers, the opposing pitchers, and, you know, there was a point early in his career where there were still guys around that Ed had pitched against, and, you know, so you had that aspect too. But I think that it is somewhat unique, perhaps not as unique anymore as it once was, that a guy who's a former player moves into that play-by-play seat. Now, in the early days of baseball on radio, I think there were quite a few guys who kind of wore both hats, and examples are really right here on this radio station. Lou Boudreau did play-by-play on Cubs radio, but he had been, of course, a player. And there were others along the way in baseball who did both. But generally,
Uecker did both,
Uecker did, yeah. And there have been others. But really, if you look at the majority, you have that formula where you have the play-by-play guy who comes up as a broadcaster and works in the minors and eventually gets his shot in the major leagues, and you have the former player doing the analysis.
Karma, I asked you, I said, okay, so what are some of the stories that you remember? I didn't know the Bush one, which, you know, every time somebody tells a story like that, So true or not, who cares? What a fun story is my attitude. Ed Farmer calls George Bush and says, we got to get the White Sox to New York. And it happened, right? And I guess there's just like a lot of those that you all know who have been following the Sox longer than I have been. I've been a White Sox fan, a big White Sox fan for about 2 years now. So what a coincidence. And so I'm just kind of catching up with some of this stuff. But what else is lore or legend about Ed Farmer?
So he told me one, John, where they're in New York, and I think he's in high school at the time, and he's with his mom. And they go to Yankee Stadium, and it's the wintertime. And his mom is trying to pay the guy at the security gate to let young Ed in there to see Yankee Stadium. And the security guy won't take the bribe. And Farmer says to him, that's okay, I'll pitch here someday, and I'll see you then. And then he does pitch there, comes out of the bullpen. I think he was with the Indians at the time. And, you know, they used to have the carts that would drive you in from the bullpen back in the day. Those have gone bye-bye, but and maybe they're actually, I think they're making like a comeback in one stadium. But regardless, he's getting driven in on the cart, and he looks at the guy, and he's like, you're the dude that didn't let me in the stadium.
That's not true. I don't care. That's,
I mean, it can't be true, but I think it's true, right? I mean, how could you even make something up like that?
Well, he remembered, I think John Zaz told us yesterday, recounting the story, that he noticed the guard who wouldn't let him in was missing three fingers on one hand.
And
he recognized that this guy in the cart was missing three fingers.
And he spoke 27 languages, too, if I'm not mistaken, which I believe French was one of them. And I didn't want to call him out on that and make him prove it to me. But I actually think he did have a handle on French, right?
I never heard him speak French, John, but I wouldn't doubt it. You know, he would just reference, you know, hey, I'm doing this study at Harvard, and I'm waiting. And he knew everything about the kidney because he had, you know, had so many. Had the transplant, but he, you know, made himself so educated, and his intelligence has been talked about a lot, that he had an incredibly high IQ. And I mean, I'll be honest, I would have an incredibly hard time following in the conversation of everything he was named. Like, you have a wide knowledge here that, you know, this is not just a baseball guy.
Well, Dave, that was my experience with him, too, sometimes. I didn't know if I needed to stop him to say, wait, what? Because I'm having a little trouble here tracking with you. But sometimes it's just a river and you let it flow, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were some times the last couple of years when he would stop by the station and visit with the staff at WGN. And I recall a couple of conversations with him had nothing to do with baseball, had nothing to do with the broadcasts. And a few times I'm saying, hey, could you just go over that part again?
Yeah, if you could I just take you back about 30 seconds there and do the thing about the Harvard thing? Because I'm not sure I heard you right, and if I did, I'm not sure I believe that. But, you know, he had a certain, it's certainly a charisma, but, you know, just a force of personality, a confidence, that when you were with him in person or you heard him on the radio, you know that he didn't brook fools not very fools well, right? He was in charge of every situation he was in that I ever experienced. I'll put it that way.
It's a good point, John. Very straight. I mean, he loved to kid around and rib guys, but he was not going to BS you and tell you stuff that wasn't true. He was integrity is a good word for Ed. And Ed, people have talked about that. There's the radio booth. And, you know, the Cubs were on GN forever, and Pat Hughes would be more than welcome in the booth. You could come in and sit there and just, you know, be quiet and watch the game from there for a little while. But Ed was like, there was nothing like it. You would have, it was like bongos were going on in the back there, and they were calling the game up front. There were so many people, and he just loved it. And in between innings, you know, you have a minute, and he would pick up young kids and take pictures and have a conversation, and then all of a sudden they'd be coming back, and he just put his headset on and keep rolling. Just because he loved it. It wasn't like he didn't care about his job. Obviously, he took tremendous pride in doing the games, but he loved having people around and just sort of being the Pied Piper.
Do we remember him for some games or some particular calls? I mean, he saw the Sox when they were their best, and he saw them when they weren't very good at all. What kind of baseball did he see and get a chance to bring to us, Dave?
Well, I didn't know if you were referring to his broadcasting or his playing days.
Either
because
one.
There's certainly some time from his playing days and an incident in particular when he hit Al Cowan's in the jaw, broke his jaw, hit him with a pitch, and then the following year, Cowan's charged the mound, went after him,
wow.
And they got into a very famous, very widely shown brawl, kind of triggered by that. But as far as broadcasting, you know, he was alongside. He called two perfect games. So I think probably if you're going to talk about any of them, because he was doing the color of the World Series alongside Rooney, but he did Philip Umber's perfect game. He did Mark Burley's perfect game. You know, I think those would probably be he called the blackout game. So those are probably the ones that I think would probably stand out to most Sox fans.
How about you, Carm?
You know, John, last year, I think in the middle of the season, and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think he missed about 2 weeks to deal with a health problem. And he came back, and I just, you know, went and said hello, and he basically was just like, I'm going to say, if you have no idea what it's like for me to be back here right now, I'm going to say a prayer of thank you before the first pitch. Like, every game, my point being here, John, is that it just meant so much for him to be there. So I don't, if you asked Ed, I don't think he would highlight anything other than just being in the booth. And he loved the seventh inning stretch and was very patriotic and,
yeah,
it was very much somebody who prayed a lot. So those moments, I mean, he would make a huge point of standing up and God bless America. It's Sunday. It's baseball. That all meant a lot to him.
That's a good point, Mark, because Sunday before they would sing God Bless America, the seventh inning stretch before Take Me Out to the Ball Game, he had a whole preamble to it that he would recite every week, right, during the top of the seventh.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah. That, again, new to our station, where the Sox just the last couple of years. So, you know, my ears have been paying more attention to him, and I noticed that. Did he do that all along, or just maybe of late? What was that all about?
I assume he'd been doing it. I can't tell you for sure, but I think so.
Yeah. Well, it was his personality and stamp on the broadcast and the team and part of the legend of Ed Farmer, that's for sure. So DJ in the booth, and of course nobody has speculated out loud yet about who's going to replace him or how that's going to go. Does DJ slide over? Does DJ stay there? We'll see what happens next. But
let's just hope there's some baseball.
Kind of a moot point right now, isn't it?
You know, it is the cruel irony of this, that just as the White Sox appear to be ready to embark on a great era in their history, that he leaves us.
Yeah. Okay, guys.
No doubt.
Well, you know, and there are times where, I think a lot of us will always remember fondly Pat Hughes and Ron Sano, and they did a lot of games when the team wasn't very good, which put, I thought, emphasis on the Pat and Ron show, we used to call it, and the chemistry and entertainment they brought people when it wasn't necessarily on the field. And I think that was maybe where Ed was standing out at times, too. Last couple of years, you could see this team coming, but at times where the team wasn't so great, you almost rely on the broadcasters more than to be entertaining, to tell good stories. And we had a great storyteller in place, didn't we? I'm out of time. Hey, Carm, good to hear you, my friend.
Thanks, John. Good to be with you.
Yeah, I'll see you. I don't know when, but let's find more ways to put you on the show, okay?
We appreciate it.
And Mr. Ennett, I'll, I guess, talk to you on Monday, huh?
I'll still be here.
Yeah,
Monday.
I'm glad to hear that, Dave. Thanks for helping us out.
Dave goes on his exercise walks by my house and stops by. That's how we have our social distancing.
We stood in Steve's driveway the other day.
Are you serious? You guys look close enough he can walk by?
Yes.
Good.
Well, he can. I don't walk that far.
I had some Ann Sather cinnamon rolls that I brought to my folks, and my sister lives nearby. And I said, hey, Dad's not eating all the cinnamon rolls. I'll bring some to you, Mary. So I stood in her lawn with the bag. I tossed it in the air, 30 feet, and she caught it. And I said, enjoy the cinnamon rolls. That's the way we deliver now. Steve's going to do the news. That's next.